When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a serious disagreement, a special bonus episode. I am one half of the show, Blake Howard. This show, as you know, is the only one of its kind on the Australian interwebs that dare tackle the sacred, oft-whispered topic of DVD culture. And today, I am talking to a director who is living out his physical media dreams with his indie horror debut, Lair, being released on the sacred format of DVD. Not digital video disc, folks. Digital versatile disc. His name is Mr. Adam Ethan Crowe, and I had a chat with him about Lair. Before we dive into that chat, here's a trailer, listen to the trailer, and then hear me have a chat with Adam about his influences, about the film, about making independent features, and doing it on the smell of an oily rag, and just hopefully it's a good little fun chat for you as a bonus. And then Alexi and I will be back on another episode of Serious Disagreement, unpacking the discs as we have want to do. But here's a trailer for Lair, and then a chat between Adam and myself. Enjoy.
Wow, it's like a princess castle.
Not too shabby at all.
You guys need anything? I am right across the hall.
We'll try to keep the noise down.
No, you scream your lungs out. We're the only ones in the building.
I'm watching you. Watching you. Watching you.
Something's got you spooked.
The doll.
I'll call her Amy.
That voodoo thing.
We dump one item in the apartment.
We can monitor this place from one of the other apartments.
One, two, three.
Anything supernatural happens, I'll record it.
Did you hear that?
Something happened in that house.
We have to get out of here, all of us!
You brought that thing into my house!
I want to talk to you about Lair. I really, really enjoyed it, first and foremost. I want to talk about horror being a playground for, I guess, stretching your formal self, like defining your fingerprints as a filmmaker. But talk to me about your influences, because this is a great little mashup of, you know, even things like, and you know, forgive me if I'm wrong and I could be completely off base, but like, you've got the Dollar Hides. I'm a Michael Mann fan, so you know,
you say
Dollar Hide, I'm only going to think about Manhunter or Thomas Harris. If you say
yes.
And you've got here Corey Johnson, who plays sort of Stephen Caramore, who's kind of like your almost like Joe Hallenbeck from Ridley Scott's Last Boy Scout. Like, he's the worst kind of downtrodden shit.
Mate, you've done this before, haven't you?
I've done it a few times. He just sounds like Joe Hallenbeck. He sounds like he's got that Shane Black thing. So tell me about making this movie, which is kind of like the anti Ed and Lorraine Warren. Like, talk to me about it.
Well, it was pretty much that. I enjoyed the first country. I enjoyed a couple of them. Big horror fan, grew up watching things like Zombie Flesh Eaters and obviously Dawn of the Dead and stuff. And I wanted to make a film that I wanted to see that I didn't think was quite out there yet. And my big takeaway from it was, a lot of the times when you've got like your evil guy, he's always just evil. He hides in the shadows and looks weird. And I thought, if I could come up with somebody who, like you said, Hallenbeck, definitely, man, who was kind of funny, charming, someone who's a bit sarcastic, but someone you'd probably have a beer with. And I thought, if I haven't really seen that in an evil guy, someone who, because they're always, you know, they're lurking. And I thought, well, maybe I'd come up with something like that. That would work for me. And so that's why I created Stephen Carrillmore. And I did a short film, actually my first short film a while ago, probably about 8-9 years ago, called Warhol. And yes. Corey was in that. And he was very, I mean, the way he speaks, he's got this kind of charm to it, just the way he delivers dialogue. And I thought, if that guy was the evil dude, then maybe I'd not see it coming. And so that's kind of where I went from there. And then the Dollar High thing, exactly that was Manhunter. I'm a huge fan of Michael Mann for many reasons, obviously, you know, he and Red Dragon and stuff, but or Manhunter. But I wanted to try and tell a scary story a little bit differently. And the same with the family as well. You know, like, I don't know if you picked up on it, but, you know, we've got some found footage in it, but we don't actually do the little found footage point of view thing. Like, we actually go through the screen and then we're in the different world. So having a different take, because we see so much in the way of found footage, and we cut to the little camera and it's going to be static and people step into the frame. And that's what we're used to seeing. I thought, well, if we could literally fade through the TV and go into that world. And again, we made this movie on a shoestring, man. Seriously, I was calling in friends and favors from friends and stuff. And we were picked up originally by the studio. We were going to make it with Fox, and we had a couple million bucks. And then Disney bought Fox and went, no, we're not making that. And so we literally ended up on the street pretty much with some much better storyboards, but not much else. And I basically was really depressed, as you can appreciate. I've been trying to get my little film made for 4 years.
Of course.
And as first feature. And my partner, Shelley, who's a crazy Kiwi, went, well, why don't we got, you know, 20 quid and a pickled egg in the bank, why don't we make it ourselves? So we spoke to a few people, we put up what little we had, and a couple of friends of ours jumped in and said, look, here's a grant, you know, here's 500 quid, I'll bring pizza. And we made a movie. We had one camera, we shot it over 21 days in central in London, which is obviously a really expensive place to be in. And we called in favors. Everyone got, we made sure everyone got paid something. Even if it was only 50 bucks, we go, everyone, we're not gonna, we said on this first film, we're gonna call out favors, and then on the next one, we'll pay everyone properly, but we're gonna pay you something. And we had so many good people pitch in as well, like Mario Grigorov is a friend of mine, and he did the score for Precious, which obviously, you know, the yes. Oscar, and he did some of Fantastic Beasts and Tarzan. And I said, we need an original score. And he was like, okay, what you got? I was like, well, this. He went, yeah, okay. And he pitched in, man, and he did a completely original score. And he had no reason to do that. And, you know, but so many people, our prosthetics, and our, you know, a friend of mine called Tristan Vasselis was my DIT operator on my very first short film. And he came over, gave us 6 days doing our monster stuff. And then he had to leave early because he was going to LA because he'd been nominated for an Oscar for 1917. So, you know, he'd come from, you know, the guy in the corner with the laptop on a film where someone's going, we can make the practicals look like we're making a Spielberg film. You know what I mean? And to basically be an Oscar nominated and still willing to roll up his sleeves and work for pizza and get on board. And that really, for me, was inspiring. You know, there are times where you set out to do something like a feature, my first feature, and you call on people and the reaction is rightly so, they can't help because they're busy or doing something else. But then when you do get those people who go, you know what, let's just go for it, people who've got a little bit of a dream behind them. And I decided then that anything I do moving forwards, you know, if you're surrounded by patriots, not mercenaries, people who are there because they really believe in what you're doing,
yeah,
rather than a paycheck, then you can pull off something. And when we first got our sales agent and we told him, like, they were like, well, what's the budget? And I was like, we made it for this. They were going, no way. And again, I'm not saying, you know, it looks like Spielberg did it, but there is a side to it where I think now technology is getting so much, has come so far that you can make something that looks like it's got some kind of production value with not much money at all. You know?
Adam, I still marvel as a film critic and still get quite frustrated, to be honest, where you see a film like a little film like your film that's made on the smell of an oily rag, basically, and you see a film like Moonlight costs $4 million. And, you know, Barry Jenkins is an extremely innovative and intuitive filmmaker. And I'm like, he made that $4 million look like $150 million. And sometimes $150 million doesn't look like $4 million, you know?
No.
The democratization of film technology certainly helps. I mean, you only have to look at the damn ads for the iPhone 13 camera. It doesn't tell you anything that the phone does. Right? It doesn't tell you what the phone does. It just tells you that you can shoot like you're shooting a movie. On that point though,
we were at Fright Fest and we were sitting next to this guy and he was saying, and we were talking, he's an American guy and he made a really good film. And he was saying about it was a micro budget and how they struggled and stuff. And then he goes, we only had $1 million. And I went, really? Okay. he just flown in from the airport. I just got off the tube. I'm going, we are really not talking about the same thing when we say micro budget. Yeah. Very different stories. But yeah, it was like, we only had $1 million. I'm going, okay.
Made $1 million. You're like $1 million. I could have made all the three movies I've got on the storyboards here.
My slate, man.
But look, you know, I think the idea, like the conceit of Lair, and so folks who are going to be listening to this are going to be listening to it in our physical media show, Serious Disc Agreement, where we're going to talk about your film. And so, you know, when we're talking about it, I don't want to spoil anything, but I just want to say that it basically, you know, the primary character of the movie, other than the family who is sort of unwittingly involved, is Stephen Caramore's character. His former mate, who we don't know too much about, is Ben Dollarhide, which is Oded Fehr, and he has done something horrendous that we get to see glimpses of at the beginning of the movie. And Caramore is a Hallenbeck style complete cynic. Who goes, look, I've been collecting all of these horrible paranormal artifacts forever. So I'm just going to hire out like an Airbnb, set up a bunch of cameras, chuck in every single thing that you would have normally found in Ed and Lorraine Warren's basement into this place, and just see what happens. I genuinely like the cynical sort of like the forever cynic as the leading character who is unwittingly the bad guy of the movie, essentially, because you have someone who like gets themselves so far down a rabbit hole that it goes. So when you were thinking about this, like, was it purely a reaction of like seeing, you know, this omnipresent sort of genre, or was it just like, you just thought, I want to put this cynical jerk in a horror movie and see what kind of chaos he can orchestrate? Cause you know, how did you get to him?
Well, my take on it was that what would I do? It's like you've got a friend of yours who has been accused of something terrible and you've got a warehouse full of all this apparently, you know, evil knickknacks and cursed Madonnas and whatever, and your dad just died and the house is empty. So why not just see what happens? Because, and, you know, there's a side to him who's going, well, if he doesn't believe it, obviously, but if something does happen, then maybe he'll get a bit of press out of it and a book deal. And if it doesn't, then, you know, he'll know his friend is crazy. So I just think sometimes you have a base reaction to certain things. I think in life as well, you kind of just go, well, you know, let's just give it a shot and see what happens. Why not? It's a Wednesday and there's nothing on TV. I just thought it'd be interesting to see one ordinary guy. Because, you know, like the Lorraine Warrens of this world and stuff, they've got their whole kind of, they've studied it and they're doing this and they believe this and they can tell you exactly where it came from. So they've done the history. We got this, you know, you got this guy who's just been wandering around collecting knickknacks and you know, talking crap or whatever. And he's gotten there and his mate's saying one thing. You know, it's like when you're in the pub with a mate of yours and they go, my car can go faster than your car. Okay, I've had 12 pints, but let's get in the car and see what wins. And it was just how normal people sometimes think is what I thought. And because Corey is so verbose in the way he talks, like, I mean, so like there's a line in there which someone actually pulled up on me where Corey sees something, it freaks him out, he goes, mother of dragons. Now I didn't like that. He just said it because he watches Game of Thrones too much, right? I didn't write that, you know, but he's just one of these guys and he's kind of charming and you know, I thought it'd be fun to play that role. And so we put our heads together and we messed around we bounced some dialogue off each other and we sort of came up with that guy between us. But I was always thinking that the Hallenbeck thing, I did, and again, I'm not going to pretend that's what I thought it was, but now you say it, you are bang on the money, brother. That is exactly what I was going for.
He just felt like that kind of character. Yeah. And I think that Corey sometimes for better or worse, and he's a phenomenal character actor. He's one of those guys. He's like an every guy. You see him, he's, you know, they say that guy. You know, you see him in lots of stuff, and you know, he for most people they might go, oh, like he's that. He's literally part of the furniture in the entire Bourne series, like such a vital role in that hunt, perpetual hunt for Jason Bourne. But I do love here that he kind of gets to show that he's much more less button up, more cheeky side. But I have to talk about as well, some of the impulses in this movie, as you said, of like you establish these rules of like, this is going to be kind of like, you know, that apartment from Sliver kind of surveillance, everything has a camera in it. And then you counter that with, like, as you said, like messing a little bit with time, messing a little bit with the, you know, the cameras moving through the visual sphere so that we're not just like stuck in the surveillance. Was that rule break part of it? Because you're like, man, in horror so much, and for better and worse, like I think some of the found footage stuff that horror has done in the last 20 years is amazing, but absolutely things get stuck into a genre convention. So you're like, you set the parameters and you're like, I'm going to move through this. I'm going to have a play around with where people think the camera should stay, where I should stay as the eye of the filmmaker.
No, you're totally right. And there have been, oh my God, look at Wreck. I mean, there are so many.
Yeah.
There are times where I was speaking to a really famous filmmaker once, and he said, all you want is a good story told well. Sometimes you tell it 3D or in color or a musical or so, and that's it. And with our film, what I wanted to do was, because I'm a monster fan, is I didn't want to show the supernatural effects grainy black and white. That was kind of where it came from.
Yes.
I wanted them to be able to see, and you've seen it. So I wanted to, towards the end of the movie, where all the sort of madness happens and people get ripped asunder or whatever happens, I won't get into it. I wanted people to be able to see it. You know, and so I thought, if I have to show it black and white, static, locked off camera, it wouldn't look as good. And so I kind of thought, well, I've got to show it, find a way so I can show it in full color, full frame, so people can see what's going on. And that was one of the mediums. And so when I did that, I thought, well, the best way to do it would be able to have a slight time jump, and then we move through the actual through the TV screen, because obviously we're looking at TV screen, the camera actually pushes through, and then we're in the other world. And we get to see what they're watching. And so that was really just, I suppose, me wanting to, like I said, it's a film I wanted to see. I want to make movies that I actually want to see. And for that to happen, I wanted people to see what was happening. So I figured this would be a good way.
It's a way to exercise your individual frustrations with sometimes, God damn it, I want to see the freaking monster. I don't just want to see a hand. I don't just want to hear a howl. Yeah,
why at the end I made sure that someone, you got to see what was going on. Obviously, like most of them, because Aliens, one of my favorite films, obviously, but to me, Alien will always be the best. But the way it hid in the shadows and stuff, which is why we've got a lot of things happening in the shadows, we don't quite see the monster. But again, like with the Maria scene and stuff, you kind of hopefully, well, I think we had a really good sound guy who helped us out on that. And some of it is just the quality of the sound when you hear things happening off screen. But when we get to the big kills, I want to see what's going on. I want to see it come out of the show. I want to see what we've been hiding from all this time. So it's important to have that as well. When we did this, we had no idea what we were going to do. And again, to be picked up by Studio Canal, look, I'll be totally upfront, man. We made this, like you say, on the smell of an oily rag. I'm going to keep that phrase. Thank you.
I'm surprised that's not in your vernacular. I feel like that's a British slang that has come to Oz as part
of
our
South African.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. So like, yeah. So that British slang that you can adopt, that's come to Oz and that lives here. Cool. That lives in the Antipodean vernacular these days.
I used to spend a lot of time out in Melbourne and stuff. So anyway, but yeah. So one thing that did happen for us with I assumed that, you know, we'd get hopefully picked up by somebody, because, you know, when you've got when so many people are putting their time and energy, you almost feel that need to make sure people see it, because so many people have donated their time and like I say, for nothing other than to be part of what we're trying to do. And that's why I think filmmaking sometimes gets taken advantage of, because people have a passion for it. I think any industry where there's passion, people lean into it. And we've, like, hopefully, or it looks like we're going to be making another movie, which is great. And the deal was, I'll call in favors on this one, but everyone gets paid something. But on the next one, everyone gets paid properly. And it looks like we're going to be able to do that now, because we've got something else lined up from based on it, you know, because of this. But for us, it was like, we had a sales agent who's a friend of a friend, again, you know, wouldn't normally pick up our kind of film and our kind of budget, but they picked it up and they went out. And when they said, look, Studio Canal, picking up your film, I nearly fell off the chair, because I assumed we'd get Steve's distribution, or, you know what I mean? And you know, when they did The Fog and all sorts of things like that, and you kind of go, and Orphan, which I think is a great movie and a lot of people don't know enough about. But so that is such a huge compliment for all of us. That's why at the front of the movie, when it comes up and it goes a film by, and then it fades in a family of filmmakers. Because when I was doing short films, I'd have an anime from Crow Film, but having walked through the process of 20 days with all these people, going to bed late, getting sick on set, turning up, beg, borrow, and steal and stuff, you know, at the end of it, I just felt disingenuous to go, this is my film, because it's not. It really isn't. And so when we heard that, and honestly, I told everyone who was picking us up, and everyone was like, what? You know, I've heard of these people. That makes no sense. And so, you know, because when someone other than your nan says you've done well, then you're kind of doing good, right?
Well, I was just going to say, for horror, you know, a few people have listened to me chat about before, like, you know, horror fans, it's especially probably of people your and my gen, it's like you grow up, and for us it was the video stores, like, and in Australia, yeah, we'd go to video stores and you get weekly hires, which for people who are listening, you may not even understand what the hell I'm talking about. You go to the store and you spend like seven, you know, it's like seven weeklies for $10. You hand over your $10 and you go get seven VHS tapes. And so when you start out, you go and get a stack of movies like the things you've mentioned. You just pull them off the shelf because it has a cool cover. Yeah. Like, you literally know nothing else. You go home and you watch it. You're scared of living shit out of yourself late at night on a small screen. And then you go back and you do it all over again the next week. Like, that's how you grow into a cinephile, especially if anyone who loves horror. And that's how, like, you know, that's a horror education I earned for myself, hard fought by getting every single film in a series and watching it. But I really truly feel, and so firstly, congratulations on the film, but I truly feel that horror, especially you know, you as an indie filmmaker and as a first feature film, like, the home video aspect of it, I don't think it loses anything. In fact, it probably gains something, because, like, horror, you do want to see it in a theater, but it's one of those things that I don't think the gap, especially when you're psychologically vulnerable in your house late at night by yourself, watching a creepy movie about monstrous objects or creepy things that may or may not be, like, telling you weird, manipulating thoughts in your brain. I don't think it loses anything. So firstly, congrats on that. Secondly, as a physical media head myself, like, having it on the shelf, I think it's just totally going to sit there perfectly. So yeah, look, huge congrats.
When I got told that, I didn't even realize that, when I got told that they were actually putting out an actual DVD, yeah, I was like, that's incredible. I need that. I'm doing it. Because I want to put it on my shelf. Because it was like, honestly, they sent through the artwork and I was like, I didn't know. I was like, oh my God, it's a DVD. Because I am still that guy. I still have all my DVDs. I love physical media. And there are certain times when you sit there, I've even got some old VHS tapes that, you know, from Horror Nasties back in the day. And I think, like any collector, you pick up certain things that go. But the biggest piece of, I'll show you this because apparently I've got to shoot. Is that what did happen was we got an email the other day, and it was from Michael Grace, who obviously wrote Poltergeist,
yes,
and produced Sleepwalkers with Stephen King and loads of other ones. And he saw the film, and he wrote me an email saying how much he enjoyed it. And that to me was like, you just don't get that. Like, you just don't, you don't get it.
That's really cool. That, I mean, that's, man. Yeah, that's
insane.
But you can tell why someone like Michael Grace would dig it for exactly that reason. Because again, how grounded in reality Poltergeist feels for so much of the movie, how grounded in like real people. And look, yeah, so I understanding you're getting the nudge. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having a chat. Thanks for bringing Joe Hallan back into the horror genre, and all the best, and all the best with everything else you do, man. Take care.
Well, Matt, hopefully I'm going to talk to you again. I'm going to make another film, and genuine pleasure, man. And yeah, thank you so much for your time. You have a great day, yeah?
Oh. Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.